Cause you're a sky, cause you're a sky full of stars. I'm gonna give. Welcome to the March podcast. This is the month of the spring equinox. At the beginning of the month, the sun, which has been steadily climbing up the sky since midwinter's day in December, will have reached a declination of minus 7.5 degrees. On March the 20th, at 16 hours and 16 minutes, it will cross the celestial equator and will begin to climb the northern celestial hemisphere. On the 20th of March, everywhere on Earth will have an equal amount of day and night. From then, until the autumn equinox in October, we who live in the northern hemisphere will have days which will be longer than the nights. At the end of the month, the sun will have climbed to a declination of plus 4.2 degrees. At the beginning of the month, the sun will rise at about 6:40 and will set about 17:40, giving a day length of about 11 hours. By the end of the month, it will rise at about 5:40 and set about 18:40, giving about 13 hours of daylight. After having a February without a full moon, we will have two this month. The moon will be full on March the 2nd, will reach last quarter on March the 9th, will be new on March the 17th, and will reach first quarter on March the 24th. It will be full again on March the 31st, when it might be referred to as a blue moon. Last month we considered some features of the moon visible through a telescope or binoculars. We did not consider the full moon as there was not one to observe. The novice observer finds it difficult to identify when the moon is full, because a nearly full moon looks very similar to the moon a day either side of full. This is because the moon, despite looking like a flat disk, is a sphere. If you look at the moon at first quarter and again the day after, you will see that the terminator, the line between light and shadow, will have moved. Around first and last quarter, the terminator is moving across your field of view and the movement is easy. Around full moon, however, the terminator is moving away from you as it crosses the west side and towards you as it moves across the east side. And this is much less easy to detect. A feature which is best seen at full moon is the debris ejected from some of the larger craters, particularly Tycho and Copernicus. Light-coloured streaks can be traced from these craters right across the surface of the moon. Lines crossing the Sea of Serenity can be traced all the way back to Tycho. Small craters have also created debris fields. For example, debris lines from Proclus, which is sited at the edge of the Sea of Crisis, can be traced across its surface. Craters creating visible debris fields tend to be relatively young and have not had time to turn darker by weathering. Two obvious features not mentioned in last month's podcast are the Ocean of Storms and the crater Grimaldi. Grimaldi is a crater with a floor flooded with lava. Its appearance resembles a small version of the Sea of Crisis, an impression enhanced by the fact that it is situated almost exactly on the opposite side of the face of the moon. The other feature of the west side of the full moon is the Ocean of Storms, Oceanus Procellarum. It is situated to the west of the Sea of Rains and runs south to below Grimaldi. It contains the crater Kepler and the very bright crater Aristarchus. On the 22nd of March, the crescent moon will pass in front of the Hyades star cluster. Viewing the event through a telescope will enable the movement of the moon to be detected against the background of the star cluster. Remember that the movement you are seeing is the movement of the moon in its orbit around the Earth, not the illusion of movement of the Earth's rotation. Keep observing the moon through binoculars or a telescope, and you will soon learn to find your way round the spectacular body. and so on to the planets. On Thursday, the 15th of March, Mercury will be visible low in the west after sunset. It will be 18.4 degrees from the sun and will be shining at magnitude minus 0.3. Venus will also be in this vicinity. It will be 16 degrees from the sun and shining at magnitude minus 3.9. The bright planet will be useful in locating Mercury as it will be 4 degrees above Venus. As always, make sure that the sun is below the horizon before beginning to look for celestial objects that are near to the sun. Damage to the eye from the sun can be sudden, serious, and permanent. On the 18th and 19th of March, at about 6:30 p.m, Venus will be about 10 degrees above the western horizon, shining brightly. Mercury will be 2 degrees higher and a little to the right. There will be an opportunity to glimpse the one-day-old moon on the 18th, about 6 degrees high at 6:30, below and to the left of Venus. The following evening, the two-day-old moon should be seen about 17 degrees high, about twice high as Venus and to its left. Mars rises about 2:30 a.m. mid-month. It will remain low in the sky and will be in the south at sunrise. Its disk is getting bigger as it comes closer to us, ready for its opposition in July. Jupiter rises around midnight at the beginning of the month, and like Mars, it will remain low in the sky and is moving towards opposition on May the 9th. Saturn rises around 4 a.m. at the beginning of the month, but during the course of the month, Saturn and Mars move closer together and will be in conjunction at the end of the month. The stars. This month, we're going to look at two of the spring constellations, Gemini, the heavenly twins, and Cancer, the crab. The twins are Castor and Pollux of Greek mythology. Their mother was Queen Leda. Castor's father was King Tyndareus, Leda's husband. Pollux's father was the god Zeus, who visited Leda in the form of a swan. The stars, Castor and Pollux, look similar to the naked eye, but in reality they are very different. Castor is 45 light years away, while Pollux is at a distance of 36 light years. Pollux is an orange giant star of magnitude plus 1.1. Castor is a double star. A telescope will show a pair of blue-white stars of magnitudes plus 1.9 and plus 2.9, which orbit each other about every 500 years. This was the first pair of stars to be recognised as being in orbit around each other. A third star, a ninth magnitude red dwarf, is part of this star system. It has been shown that each of these three stars are double, but so close to each other that they cannot be split by telescopic magnification. They are what is known as spectroscopic doubles. Gemini is home to a planetary nebula known as the Eskimo Nebula. It is a star that is dying and has thrown off some of its atmosphere. The patterns in the gas, when seen through a telescope, resemble an Eskimo wearing a fur hood. The nebula can be found at right ascension 7 hours 29 minutes 14.8 seconds and declination 20 degrees 54 minutes 53 seconds. Gemini is also the home of the open cluster M35. The cluster has over 100 members and is spread over an area the size of the full moon. It is to be found at the opposite end of the constellation to Castor and Pollux, at right ascension 6 hours, 8 minutes and 57 seconds, declination 24 degrees, 19 minutes and 58 seconds. To the left of and below Castor and Pollux is a small and rather insignificant constellation, Cancer. It is home to one of the most famous open clusters, M44, the Beehive. It used to be known as Precipi, or the Manager. It can be seen by the naked eye as a fainty misty patch. The ancient Greeks used it for weather forecasting. If the Manager was invisible on an otherwise clear night, It was said to be a sign of an approaching storm. The beehive covers an area of sky equivalent to three times the area of a full moon. It is 520 light years away, and through a pair of binoculars it is said to resemble bees around a beehive. It is a spectacular sight when seen through binoculars. Telescopes have too restricted field of view to bring out the best in it. And that is all for this month, other than to remind you that the clocks go forward on March the 25th, taking us into British summertime and bringing lighter evenings. So, see you next month.